I think it's good for democracy.
I'd like to see the greener issues.
The issues would be for the homeless and the farmers.
Well, they've done something, but they haven't done enough.
A few of them need to be turfed out, I think.
Hello, and you're very welcome to RTE News' Your Politics. I'm joined in studio today by three people from our political staff, Sandra Hurley, Aisling Kenny and Fiachra O'Kiona. And what do you know, we're going to be talking about government formation in all of its glories. Sandra, if I can start off with you, we're on the cusp, we believe, of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil agreeing some form of document. What type of document do you anticipate it's going to be?
Yes, well, they're calling it a joint framework document. I'm not sure that the title tells us a whole lot about it, but we are pretty confident that they are going to reach a deal. That's what we know. They've had several meetings. They've exchanged their own policy papers. What they're telling us is that they're now kind of merging these papers, elements of them, and they're going to hopefully tomorrow when they meet, sign off on this joint document. If it doesn't happen tomorrow, then early next week. So what's in it? Well, we're told broad outlines. I mean, this is not a detailed programme for government. It's not about detailed costings and figures. It's about sort of priorities for a new coalition government. But what's the idea behind it really is also key. The idea is that they want to present something that sort of has enough detail in it to entice people to sort of look at it and take it seriously, but that it's open enough that they can make it obvious for people, that other parties and independents, that they can come in and put their stamp on it. So we're told, you know, the COVID emergency is at the top of it. That's obvious. Rebuilding the economy, and then big headlines on health, housing, climate action, childcare, that type of thing.
So you could nearly have it something along the lines of, we will build blank number of houses over blank number of years through blank mechanism. So it'll be the principle of the direction that they want to go, but the blanks won't be filled in. That's up to maybe the smaller parties to put in what they want, and that's a means of enticing them in, is that it?
Yeah, exactly, because we've heard repeatedly from, you know, Leo Varadkar and others, especially on the Fine Gael side, but also from other parties, that in terms of forming a solid, stable majority government that's going to last the next couple of years, they don't just want Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, some independence or something like the confidence and supply that we saw last time. They want to get well over the 80-seat majority, and when you crunch the numbers, you get 72 for Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil together. They are hopeful that some of the independents, maybe the regional group and some others, may also be pretty interested in coming on board if they can be satisfied with what's in it. That'd get them maybe just about over 80, but they need another party. And not just for the security within the votes. You know, Leo Varadkar spoke about having a legitimacy from having a broader base in government. You know, people are talking about it as the, you know, the fourth leg of the stool. They want another party in there to... We're also going to hear a lot about change. Now, we heard a lot about change in the election, but they want to present this to other parties as perhaps fulfilling in some way the perceived desire for change that we saw manifested in the election result.
You're right. Indeed, it was Heather Humphreys, the Fine Gael minister, who was speaking just yesterday, saying that in some ways the plan which would be developed by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael would reflect the desire of change from the electorate themselves only a number of weeks ago. But Aisling Kenny, let's take it that some form of agreement is agreed between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. How would these two parties then get it passed? Because it's not up to the negotiators to pass it. It has to have party backing.
Yeah, so in normal circumstances, the parties meet. For example, Fianna Fáil holds an Ardéche where it's one member, one vote, and they vote on whether or not they want to go ahead with the programme for government. Fine Gael is a little bit different. It has a weighted system, so the parliamentary party gets 50% of the vote. Labour also holds a party conference to get the mood of their members, and they have a one member, one vote system. The Green Party has a two-thirds majority, so they require two-thirds of the party to vote for the programme for government. Now, obviously, with the officials are looking at technical ways now, like Zoom or perhaps a postal ballot, because obviously, you know, those meetings can't happen with the COVID-19 restrictions that are in place. And obviously, the postal ballots were held, you know, for the Shannon elections and also used in the Labour leadership race. And it worked well then, but due to the fact that, you know, there are 20,000 members in Fianna Fáil, whether or not it would work on that scale, it really remains to be seen. And also, There is also the issue that politics is a close contact sport, and politicians like having the chit chat, you know, on the corridors of Leinster House, thrashing out their, you know, ideas and having discussion and dialogue on different issues. And that obviously can't happen if the membership are voting in a postal ballot. So, that is a difficulty. And also parties are saying that no official decision has been made at the moment on whether or not they'll how they'll have that membership vote. So we don't know yet.
I mean, it sounds interesting insofar as from Fine Gael's point of view, that weighted system seems to tilt the power more towards the party hierarchy, towards the direction that Leo Varadkar would want to take it. Whereas Micheál Martin has got that far open, far more open contest. It goes to the floor of an Ard Fhéidh, whatever, whether that's a real floor or a digital floor. But there's far more potential for problems for Micheál Martin than there is for Leo Varadkar. Would that be fair?
Absolutely. Well, as I said, there are 20,000 members in Fianna Fáil. If they all, for example, had to go on a Zoom conference, I mean, that's just not possible. And also, what about a postal ballot? Like, counting 20,000 postal ballots? Like, we need to form a government quickly, they're saying. So, you know, it seems like a huge undertaking. So how they're going to do the membership vote, we just don't know, because as I said, usually it's they meet, they come together and they vote and they meet in one place, which just isn't possible at the moment.
Fiacre, if I can bring you in on this, you've been reporting on the question of the Labour Party and, you know, how they're going to tackle the issue. And Alan Kelly has said it's really up to other parties because, say, for example, the Greens, you know, they, you know, moved from 3 to 12 seats. Labour actually lost a seat. But tell me something about the dilemma that Alan Kelly faces. He's the new leader, so he's got some power. And yet it'd be like walking into a casino and putting all his money on black to go to the membership now at this particular juncture and say, I think we should go into government. Is that a fair analogy?
That's a very fair analogy. And normally with Alan Kelly, with his approach to politics and the style of politics, that would be an approach that you would imagine he would consider doing. That he's a kind of all or nothing, very upfront type of politician. But now that he's become leader, he now suddenly has something to lose. He's no longer the guy who's breathing down his leader's neck. He's now the leader himself. And because of that, whatever steps he takes, he needs to make sure he brings his party with him. That explains, to a large extent, his coyness over the past week since he became leader last Friday evening in terms of what he will do. He's been quite clear both in the statements on Saturday afternoon from his press office and when he was speaking with Morning Ireland on Tuesday morning. He was quite clear that he was saying that he does not want to lead Labour into a full-on coalition with Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. But he was coy when he was asked, what about a confidence and supply deal? What about some kind of specific deal to help Ireland over the line, both during COVID-19 and its aftermath, which is very important in terms of the negotiations, in terms of the talks, because some very difficult decisions are going to have to be made in terms of the economy after COVID-19 is resolved. So there is an issue for the Labour Party in terms of what exactly it will do. At the moment, Alan Kelly is trying to sit on the fence, but he's making it clear enough that he will listen to suggestions he should go in for talks without maybe having any real plan to go into government. Now, in terms of the other parties that are in consideration, the Green Party, and I think it's been well discussed in public at this stage, are in some division in terms of what they should do. It's been strongly suggested that Eamon Ryan is quite open to going into a coalition, which could solve Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin's riddle and their quagmire. Bear in mind that the Greens have 12 seats, but then new TDs like Nessa Horgan and others are quite reluctant to go in with Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, and that would maybe represent the younger side of the Greens, the more idealistic side. In terms of the Soc Dems, they have made it very clear repeatedly that they have no interest in going into a government with Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. So it really leaves the independents and the three groups of independents, in particular the regional independents group, which includes former ministers like Sean Canney and Dennis Nocton. I think they're the group that could potentially be the bridge for Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin.
Sandra, if we can bring you back in there again, just on the dilemma that Alan Kelly faces. So I was just looking again at the votes. Votes for Alan Kelly, 1047. Votes for Éan Riordan, 868. And Éan Riordan was very clear that if you voted for him, it meant not going into coalition with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. So Alan Kelly has not just the members, he's also got Éan Riordan looking over his shoulder too.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I think something we should say about the vote is that, you know, if you'd asked members early on, people thought it was more 80-20 to Alan Kelly. And certainly the Oireadan camp feel that they ran a pretty good campaign. Of course, they didn't get it in the end, but 55-45%, that sort of broke down as that actually Oireadan did very well. But yes, in terms of getting it through Labour, if Alan Kelly was going to go that way, it's obviously difficult. The Central Committee has already ruled that, you know, they're going to stay in opposition this time. The Parliamentary Party, other than Sean Sherlock, who came out publicly and suggested they should perhaps look at going into talks, the Parliamentary Party is against it. So it would be difficult, and the Labour membership is seen, perhaps perceived to be likely to be against it as well. But I think perhaps we got a clue to maybe where Alan Kelly might be on this when he spoke to Jenny O'Sullivan, our colleague, at the weekend. You know, he mentioned that they would do whatever was necessary in the national interest. You just feel that there's a chink of light there, that he's maybe leaving the door open a little bit. Of course, you know, in the nature of these political negotiations, we as journalists ask the question, you know, are you willing to go into government? And people don't put their hands up and say yes. This is all about a kind of a brinkmanship as well. The Social Democrats, I would agree with Fiacra. You know, I spoke to a senior person today about what they're hearing so far, and they are already very sceptical about what they're hearing. They say that when they hear things like a pathway to a childcare system, a national childcare system, that doesn't sound like an immediate plan, does it? That, you know, what we're hearing are things like pilot schemes at community level. That's not something that's going to happen overnight. There's also talk of, you know, moving to a single tier health system. Simon Coveney talked about a plan to get to that point. Well, again, that's not going to fit in exactly with where the Social Democrats are and how they feel about Sláinte care. They want to push much quicker for things like that to happen. So, yes, I would see them as being reluctant. They are, of course, going to look at what's in the document. And then the Greens, the stated position, again, from everybody is about this national unity government. I did hear an interesting point today from speaking to somebody in the Greens. They said one of the things they're not totally clear about is that their party membership doubled in the past year. Now, you have to be a member for 6 months in order to be able to vote at the party conference. So not all of those new members are going to be able to vote. But they're not even totally clear themselves on how these new members might feel. Do they want to see, of course, they're likely to want to see radical actions in terms of climate change. But could they be persuaded that it's better to be able to do that from within government than from opposition? That really is the key choice for the Greens to make.
So many questions are up in the air, hanging over all of these parties and the choices that are open to them. But it isn't just in the question of negotiations, Aisling. It's also affecting this Parliament. We still don't know how a sitting is going to be conducted next Thursday, because that's the next day that the Dáil is due to return. Or is it going to be a digital format? Or are we going to borrow ideas from the European Parliament, as you were mentioning on the last podcast? Where are we at on any of that?
Well, so the Houses of or the House of Commons authorities in the UK this week announced that they announced plans to hold a virtual Parliament sitting after Easter, should it be necessary. Now, we spoke to the House of the Oireachtas this week, who are also saying that they're examining technical solutions for Dáil sittings. And I was speaking, for example, to Michael Moynihan, who's a Fianna Fáil TD who sits on the Dáil's Business Committee. And he was saying, you know, the Dáil just cannot continue to sit the way it has been over the past a couple of times, a reduced number of TDs gathering. He's saying, as the crisis, the COVID-19 crisis continue, this just can't continue, that other solutions have to be found. Now, a virtual Dáil all seems like, you know, a really good idea. But the problem is that within our constitution, it states that TDs have to be present and voting, which means they have to be gathered together and they have to be able to vote. And it also states that the Dáil has to be held in or near Dublin city centre. So obviously that raises, you know, problems for a virtual Dáil sitting and whether or not it's possible at all to have one. Obviously, the House of the Oireachtas says they're exploring it, but this will be a difficulty for them. Now, it has been raised by some politicians, including Independent Senator Michael McDougall, that maybe they could have a designated committee. So maybe that could be held instead of a Dáil sitting, so TDs could gather there and ministers could answer questions, you know, in that way, and that could get over the problem. But as well, just to say, this isn't the only, you know, this has been done in other areas. So, for example, in the US state of Pennsylvania, they have been doing remote voting in their Senate. And it only came in when the COVID-19 crisis broke. And senators have been voting from home. Some have been choosing to go into the floor of the Senate to vote, but others who want to stay at home because they're afraid of COVID-19 and getting it have. So it has worked, is what I'm saying, in other areas.
Yeah, like,
but it's
Welsh
just
Assembly
getting
is
over
another one.
Yeah, exactly. It's just getting over the technical difficulty within the Constitution.
Yeah, you know, this present. I heard Barry Linehan of another colleague in Drive Time saying that he believed that if the government was to rent the National Convention Centre Dublin for the election of the Taoiseach, so all 160 TDs being present, that was going to cost around €160,000, and then it would cost €50,000 for every successive sitting after that.
Right.
So this is... it's not just complicated, it's also costly. If I can bring you in on this particular one, Fiacra, we seem to be entering a world where there are no certainties. And it's a joy as a presenter to be able to ask reporters impossible questions and ask them to be black and white. So can I ask you, is the Dáil going to be sitting next Thursday? And if it's delayed to the following week, will one of those parties we mentioned, the Sock Dems, the Greens or Labour Party, be in discussions with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael by then?
Well, I would imagine on the second point that if the Dáil is not to sit next Thursday, that would actually benefit both Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin for the exact reason you pointed out in the second point. It would give them a little bit of breathing space, which they're going to need to convince either Labour or the Sock Dems or Independents to go into talks at least. Now, in all likelihood, it will be a case of the independents going in first, particularly the regional independent group and possibly Matthew McGrath and Michael Healy Ray's group, the rural independents, and the third group as well with Marion Harkin. By the very fact that they would be open for discussions, it may drag in possibly Labour into the outskirts, the boundaries of those talks. In terms of the first point of whether the Dáil is going to sit next week, the opposition parties, just like a couple of weeks ago, are adamant there is a need for the Dáil to continue to sit, particularly during times of emergency legislation being put to the people and imposed on the people. So I think by that very fact, there will be some form of sitting next week.
Sandra, we sit on the cusp of big decisions being taken by the government when we have a parliament that isn't sitting on continuing with those restrictions on the public at large. Tomorrow we expect some form of announcement, although it's not certain just at the moment. What seems to be the likelihood that those restrictions will be continuing, and what are the political ramifications, do you think, for them?
Well, I think we all expect really that the restrictions are going to continue even in their most extreme form that we have at the moment that have been in place. I suppose, I think it's around 2 weeks, wasn't it? It was Friday night 2 weeks ago when Leo Varadkar made that call, made that announcement, I suppose, just before 9 o'clock. So they are likely to continue. We are seeing some element of, we're told, of flattening the curve in terms of the numbers, but not enough yet. Mm-hmm. So they are going to continue that. I think in terms of the political ramifications, I wonder about, there's been an element of, you wouldn't quite say cohesion, but the opposition parties have been coming together to support the government. We saw those emergency measures a few weeks ago voted through the Dáil. They have been bringing support. Nobody voted against it at the time. They have been offering support so far. I wonder, is that going to fray a little bit? I think the health spokespeople, Louise O'Reilly and Sinn Féin, Stephen Donnelly and Fianna Fáil, have been becoming a little frustrating and voicing that publicly.
Frustrating.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Good correction there. That they're feeling that they're not getting all the answers that they are entitled to. And that was really manifest last week in that kind of fractious Dáil sitting when Josepha Madigan really inflamed tensions by coming in and saying shame on you to some of the people asking questions. So I wonder, are we going to see much more fraying and a somewhat of an unravelling around that?
Aisling, we are moving into, as you say, this uncharted territories. The opposition have been asking questions. They've been allowed under, I think it was a standing order on Monday, that they would be able to submit questions on health when the health minister would then be able to answer them the next time the Dáil sat down. But once again, you do, I think Sandra's right in this, you do get a sense among opposition parties that they want more answers, they want more detail, but they don't think they're going to get it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's, you know, a frustration, and that's why they wanted the Dáil to continue to sit. And it was Richard Boyd Barrett last week was adamant that TDs would continue to gather in Leinster House, because he was saying, you know, that they need to get the answers they have in relation to areas including health. Obviously, COVID-19 is such a big crisis. There's so much going on and so many people looking for answers, you know, whether it be in relation to personal protection equipment, difficulties in nursing homes, you know. Every week is throwing up different problems, and TDs have questions and they want to be able to question government ministers. And that's why they're so, as I said, that's why they want the Dáil to sit.
Fiacra, if I can bring you in on this, there is some suspicion among Fine Gael that to a certain extent opposition spokespeople are grandstanding, that they are being briefed. Indeed, as we hold this podcast, the leaders of the opposition parties are meeting both the Taoiseach and the Minister for Health for exactly that. And there's a certain extent that there's a feeling among government ministers that opposition parties are asking questions, and at times they may even know the answers themselves, but they just want to make sure that they're kept relevant. Do you think that's a fair analysis?
I think that's absolutely spot on, but I think it's spot on in terms of both sides of that fence. There's two realities of this. Firstly, opposition parties are being kept informed. There are, I think it's a bi-weekly meeting of the various parties' leaders just to inform them of what's taking place. And that's totally understandable and fair to happen. But obviously, politicians work in politics, and the whole point of politics in a lot of ways is to outmaneuver your opponent even in times of crisis. And there is an element of both the government and opposition parties both grandstanding on this issue and both trying to both help the country but also help themselves in these issues. That's understandable. Politicians are always going to do this. I think most people can see through maybe the little games that are being played on this issue while people are still trying to be serious.
Well, just before we go, I'm going to ask the three of you just to sort of take it all back down from that weighty stuff into sort of your individual perception. We've been now living in lockdown effectively for 2 weeks. What's your sense on, indeed, even lockdown is a controversial phrase, it's just under heavy restrictions. Just as you are coming into the Dáil today, what is it that you see? Is it the lines outside the supermarkets? Is it the empty streets? What is it that sort of represents visually for you, you know, the time that we're living in at the moment?
Yeah, I suppose the empty streets. I mean, it has been said it is quite pleasant if you cycle or you're going around the city centre. There's very few people around, but that's not good either, because all the shops and all the so many restaurants and everything are closed. And yes, what will we remember of this time? Queuing outside supermarkets and quite reasonably good tempered queues as people wait to go in. Strange times of people dodging each other in the supermarkets, trying to get out of the way and wondering that if you go to the park with your family, you know, are you going to be, is someone going to come over and say there's too many of you hanging around together, you know, and you can't talk to other people you run into. Yeah, it's an odd time. It really is.
Sorry, Aisling, we're talking about that expression, I wouldn't come near you with a barge pole, and that's actually a fact now.
Well, it's coming up to the Easter Bank holiday weekend. We've a beautiful sunny day out there. Usually the streets of Dublin would be thronged with people. And, you know, there is that feeling of eeriness. But what really, I suppose, brings it home for me is the Garda presence on the streets. There's a really heavy Garda presence. And, you know, I think that that's significant.
What about you, Fiacra?
Yeah, I'd agree with both of those references. I think really the image that's kind of striking my mind, and particularly over this weekend, is the image of tourism hotspots in the country urging people not to come down from Dublin and not to come down from the cities for the weekend, for the normal Easter bank holiday weekend. It shows that while we've been living with this scenario for the past few weeks, and at some level maybe have become used to it, that there's still a real fear just beneath the surface of people just being concerned about what might happen to them.
Well, all we can say is stay safe, stay at home and wash your hands. I'd like to thank Sandra Hurley, Aisling Kenny and Fiacra O'Connor for joining me on Your Politics podcast. We'll be back next week. Take care.